Welcome back to the Radio Academy podcast. I'm your host, Georgie Jameson, and this week we meet another of our new fellows, Nick Pitts. Nick is Deputy Chair of the Academy and has a 30-year career in the radio and audio industry. He's been Content Director at Jazz FM since 2018 and took over as Content Director of Magic Classical in 2024. I asked Nick how much of a shock it was when he realised he was about to be made a Fellow of the Academy.
I mean, it was a total shock. So for those that don't know, I'm the vice chair of the Radio Academy, soon to be Audio Academy. One of the roles I've taken on in my time of doing that over the last 4 years is managing the process of selecting our new fellows each year. So up until that point, I thought I knew who the four fellows were. So, you know, everyone says it's a surprise, but for me more so because I was sat in that room expecting it to be someone else. And therefore, I had a zero preparation in what I was going to say, in how, I mean, it was just a shock. And, you know, when you're shocked, your mind goes to jelly. But it was a lovely surprise and really, really kind of the Academy and the Fellowship and the trustees to induct me into such a, you know, an amazing collection of executives and brilliant creative people from across the years.
Well, I was going to ask you that because as someone who does every year help organise who the fellows are going to be, how on earth did we manage to keep it from you?
I have no idea. Brilliant bunch of trustees. You know, I don't even know when they decided. I don't even know how they decided, but they did a great job of it. It was funny. So I knew Chris North was getting his, and Chris's was the first one of the day.
And he was surprised, wasn't he?
And I wasn't in the room at the time of it. But I saw him afterwards, and I went, massive congratulations on your well-deserved fellowship. And he went, oh, yeah. Oh, what a surprise. Anyway, I got to go. And he was boom, 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 straight through. And he told me afterwards, he said, because he was shocked and his mind was all over the place, he didn't want to accidentally drop that I was going to be getting the next one.
Yes.
It nearly came to pass that Chris North accidentally dropped it in it, but he was brilliant and didn't.
It's nearly as good as the traitors, this, isn't it? Are you all keeping it from each other?
I went into the auditorium to see the next one being given, and I saw Fran Plowright, who runs RAP, and we wanted to just have a quick catch-up about something. And I went, oh, let's just go outside very quickly. And so we innocently started to walk out, and Dixie grabbed me as she was walking in and said, just come and see the fellowship. It's good to have you in the room for it. I mean, Dixie was so calm as a cucumber, but clearly there was literally in seconds going to be Jonathan coming out on stage to hand me my fellowship, and I wasn't going to be in the
room. You were going to be in the room.
But yeah, there we go. It was lovely.
What does the fellowship mean to you?
So I've been doing this for 30-odd years now, working in our industry, and I joined the Academy and went to Academy events in my first year of work in radio in 1993, 94. I remember going to a festival up in Birmingham, and there was the big fellows lunch at lunchtime. It was part of the festival. And I was sat on a table with Tim Blackmore, who, you know, big, legendary radio executive, trailblazer in his time at the BBC, in his time in commercial radio, in his time as an independent, you know, constantly building the industry in which we are all minions and part of today. I saw fellowships being given to people who I didn't really know how important they were, but I looked up to. So to even be classed as being a leader in the industry that deserves this is embarrassing, but really, really is what it means. It shows you how much it means, is that, you know, I'm now listed in a list of people that includes the great and the good of the industry. And I just find that a bit bonkers, really. But that's how much it means to me, is that I've been recognized in that way. And I feel uncomfortable about it. I always will. I feel massive imposter syndrome about it. But when I look at that list, it just blows my mind. Oh, and it made my mum incredibly proud. My mum and dad, it made them incredibly proud. And my mother had tears. So, you know,
that's
what?
Lovely.
It's worth it just for that, to make your parents proud, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. It's lovely. Let's go right back to the beginning. You mentioned there you've had a 30-year career in audio, radio. So what's your earliest memory of radio?
Of radio itself is sitting in my kitchen at a very young age, hearing Noel Edmonds on Radio 1 at the weekend, from Dingley Dell and bringing to life this imaginary world. So we're talking here the very late 1970s.
Early 80s, aren't we? Yeah, me too.
I can picture where I was sitting in the kitchen that I've not been in for 40 years. I can picture myself now sitting there listening to it. And then fast forward, I remember my local radio station, Radio Mercury, which is in Surrey and Sussex, being launched in, I want to say 83, 84, something like that. Until that point, being in sort of North Surrey, we were served by London stations like LBC and Capital, that's what it was, or the BBC. And I had been a sort of BBC listener until that point, Radio 1. And so what it did was it sort of made my home patch a place that was spoken about on the radio. And to this day, I still get excited when I hear our local town mentioned on the radio. It's ridiculous.
Everyone does, though. Everyone loves to hear their place mentioned.
Yeah, especially if it's a good story. When Mercury came and they would be out and about and I would go and see them doing live broadcasts from, you know, it was the olden days of live broadcasts from a bed shop or a car showroom or a local park or whatever. I would go. I remember seeing them doing an evening show in Woolworths in Red Hill and giving out records, that the records that no one wants. You know, the PR, the pluggers send them in.
Yeah, and car stickers and all that.
That much get on air and the rest, they're like, put them in the prize
pool. That's the one.
And so, you know, that is my earliest memory of these things. Mercury was a full service local station. So it would do mainstream during the day. And then at the weekends, it would do a country show, a classical show, a jazz show, blah, 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 blah. And I remember Radio Mercury had a theme tune and it was played by the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra. And it was created by who is now someone who's a very good friend of mine, a guy called David Arnold. And they used to every year do a concert at the Fairfield Halls in Croydon. And my parents would take me along to that Radio Mercury concert where they play the theme in full and other pieces of classical music with the RPO, and David would be there conducting it. And in fact, a couple of years ago, when I first took on Scala, we did a concert at the Palladium. It was a second or third one. And I really wanted it to have the credibility and a sort of family feel about it. So we hired the Royal Philharmonic Concert Orchestra. And I asked David, who is also the creator of what was the Scala jingles at the time, but the Jazz FM themes as well. And that's how I know him. I asked him to come along and conduct that orchestra. So we had a real family and a feel of authenticity about what we were doing. But that takes me back to those days of sitting at the Fairfield Halls in Croydon watching them do the Radio Mercury theme live.
I can get from you this amazing love of audio, your enthusiasm when you are thinking back to those early influences. It just pours out of you, Nick. I can see it on your face, this love of sound. So how did your career start then? How did you turn that love, that enthusiasm, into what you do for a living?
That's very kind of you to say, and I do love it. And I don't know what I'd do if I didn't have it. You know, it would have to be something totally different. I listened to the radio nonstop when I was a kid, played records, had a record player from an early age. Music was really, really important in my life, and then radio came along.
Did you used to pretend to DJ like I did?
I had a little house that we lived in a village called South Nutfield. From about 1985, 86, I lived there. So I would have been 12, 11. And my bedroom was in the attic. And it had it was a proper sort of gabled roof. And there was an extra gable at the front where it sat above a window below. And I could actually climb over a beam and go into that little space. You couldn't stand up in it. And I created my own little radio studio in there of an old hi-fi, of an old record player, of a microphone. And then I got a little...
This is brilliant.
I got one of those electronic kits that were all the rage in the early 80s that you could build, and I could build a little transmitter. So I could transmit it to the radio over the other side of the beam. So yes, I did. Set up my own.
I love it.
In your bedroom. We've all done it.
We've all done it. I'm just pleased it's not just me. I love it.
Yeah, exactly. But I wanted to, you know, I knew I wanted to do something in radio or television was what I wanted to do. I did some work experience in a television studios that no longer exists in South London for a week. And as much as it was lovely as it was, they didn't have a job on. So there was it was like a skeleton crew of people there. The one job I did across the week was paint two walls of a site, Ultimate Blue, which is what they do for the old CGI separation. And that was the gig for the week. And it was as dull as anything. And then I did work experience at Radio 1 for a week. although you, of course you are not producing programs or whatever, you are shadowing a role called the messenger. My God, it was alive with energy and ideas and creativity and brilliant people and lots of people and people who gave you time and talked to you and what have you. So I knew that that was when I wanted to do radio, and that was in about 1990. And so I just kept writing off to them. In the meantime, I joined a hospital radio station in 1991 in Crawley, and so learnt my trade there, learnt how to broadcast all the elements of a radio station, of not just that it's a DJ choosing records, far from it. There's a lot of other things that go on in the background. And I just kept in touch with the people at Radio One who I had done my work experience for. And I happened to write one day and I timed it well, and they went, funnily enough, the messenger job is coming up. Do you want to come in and talk about it? And I went in dressed in a ridiculous suit and a briefcase for the messenger job. And I got it for nine, and I was a messenger at Radio One for 9 months. And that was the point when I really started to get involved, understand things, make friends with people, learn how this happens, how that happens, et cetera, et cetera. And then when another job came up, a role called the Schedules Coordinator or the Network Broadcast Assistant, as it came, applied for that and got that job. That was a staff job. It was not a 9 month contract. It was, you know, as long as you want it sort of thing. So that's the sort of potted history. And the funny thing is, I was talking the other week to an uncle of mine who, at the time, there was no such thing as the internet. How on earth do you get into the BBC? And he wrote to the BBC saying, my nephew wants to work for the BBC. How would he go about it? And they sent a load of paperback about the different jobs, like A4 things. And they were all like, you need to go to university, you need to go to university. So this first job of mine was in my year out. I was going to go and do a media course, but I took a year out and I got the job as a messenger at Radio 1. So, which is why I joke, I'm still in my year out because I didn't do university because I found it my own way.
You're still in your gap year, Nick.
Yeah, well, one day I might go and do a media course. Whether I'm successful or not is another thing.
What's been your proudest moment in your career?
Oh, I can't pinpoint it down to one. I mean, and I've been really lucky. My career has sort of spanned three different elements of it. An early passion of mine was imaging and station sound, and to be part of the team that changed the station sound on Radio One from the old style, and they're brilliant, the old style jam jingles, to a sound designed approach, and being part of that team was brilliant. I mean, there were some producers and I was an AP who was scheduling and helping, but they also, part of it, the workload was such you ended up making stuff. So being part of that team that changed the face of station imaging in the UK is a proud moment. Another one of those three parts is that I spent quite a few years producing breakfast shows on radio. And the biggest one I did, and the one for the longest, most influential time, was at Heart in London with John O'Coleman at the helm. And we got to a place where we had, I worked with Erica North, who I love dearly, Emma Forbes, who was brilliant, and Harriet Scott, who to this day works over the desk at Magic from where I am in Bower, and creating a breakfast show that won a Sony Gold Award, I think 2004. That is a proud moment because, you know, I think people think you just walk into a room and you just say what you want, but the amount of preparation every day that goes into creating a breakfast show, especially back then, and I know I see my colleagues on the other Bower stations today, the amount of work that goes into making those programs to make them sound natural, have a consistency. I loved it. It was a brilliant time in my life. Yes, you have to wake up every day at 3:30 and get into work, but my God, you'd spend those hours with your best mates. It was brilliant. So there's that. And then the other one is the position I'm in now, which is running a station like Jazz FM, which this year turns 36 years of age. I remember listening to it in 1990 on the 4th of March, listening to it and in my stepdad's van on the first day, and to call those people who are still on air today, like Helen Mayhew, Jez Nelson, Chris Phillips, friends and colleagues, is brilliant. But creating the Jazz FM you hear today, which I first put into action back in 2014, and still being able to run it today and being trusted by the powers that be at Bower to just go with it, it's your radio station, you know, it makes me so proud.
What about your biggest surprise, Nick? What's been the biggest surprise about not just your career, but the industry in general?
Personal one is getting that fellowship and being seen to be deserving of it. I think the speed in which things happen today is the biggest surprise, is that radio is always, I use radio as a term because up until podcasts and stuff, it was radio, and we've all learned from that. Radio has always been a very instant, immediate medium. You can have an idea, and with the most creative brains, of which everyone who works in radio and audio are, you can turn it into something like that. Mainly on air, less so in the back room. But today, that has infiltrated the back room as well. So now you can have an idea, and with the right people running it in the background, you can have that idea on air within hours, days, minutes. I remember when Her Majesty the Queen died, obviously none of it, there was a lot of people who'd never done an obit before. I remember doing the obit for Diana, Princess of Wales, and to a lesser degree when Princess Margaret died. The year before, of course, we'd had Prince Philip pass away, but there hadn't been anything as big as the obits since Diana. When Diana passed away, that changed the mindset around what obituary procedures are on radio stations. And so when Her Majesty the Queen died, I was the only person on our team, on my two radio stations, who'd ever gone through an obit procedure before. And the speed at which they all grabbed hold of that and ran with it was mind-blowing. And I think that, and how podcasts have come along, how other technologies have adopted the take on how to create audio from that heritage of radio, and the speed at which they can move things along is the biggest surprise. It shouldn't be a surprise. We are a malleable, brilliantly creative, not just in what we say and what we do, but how we do it. We are one of the most creative industries out there, so I shouldn't be surprised at all.
We're talking a lot on the podcast at the beginning of 2026 about career development and about starting out, and lots of advice and lots of tips for people who are on the beginning of their audio journey. So as someone who's had a career that's stretched over 30 years, what's the one piece of advice you would give to someone listening now who's about to start out?
It's always a really difficult one, because the advice when I was doing it 30 years ago, it was a totally different beast. The whole world was a totally different beast. You know, for me, it was I just happened to be in touch with the right person at the right time. All I can do is say, from my perspective in running two radio stations that are very specialist, is that it starts as a negative, but take it as a positive, which is I can't stand hearing people who get the station wrong, the name's wrong, the brand's wrong, haven't got a knowledge or an interest in what those stations and those brands are about. So the positive to take away is anyone who wants to get in this industry, absolutely push it, but do your research. Understand what it is you want to do in this world. Find your place in it and sell yourself in that place. The scattergun approach is not the greatest way these days, because everyone is, I'm really lucky, I've got the best job in the world, but it does mean I'm incredibly busy. And I want to hear from people who love jazz and classical music. Work out what it is you want to do and apply yourself in that space.
That's a brilliant piece of advice. And I think I've heard that so many times from lots of people. And it is listen to the station, listen to the podcast, listen to the presenter or the producer's work that you admire and want to work with. And so many people don't. And it flabbergasts me. They haven't listened to the station.
I'll get 200-400 emails a day. Right? Oh. A lot of those in there will be from subscriptions or record labels or venues or festivals. Again, that you've got to remember, there's both classical and jazz in there, right? And so you can imagine that at the moment on my email screen in front of me, I can see the way I've got it laid out, I can see 10 emails, 10 things. So within half an hour, they will all drop below the fold in my screen. This is the reality of life. They will all drop below from my visual. So I have to scroll through. So there will be a point in a day where I'll go highlight, they all look like PRs, what have you, I'll move those and read them later. So if it doesn't grab my attention and it doesn't talk to me as the guy who is running those brands, it will either go in the trash or be left for another time and I might never get to it. It is that whole thing of grab my attention, show me within the first line of your email that you understand who we are and what we're doing. And I would say that's to anyone as well. Don't contact the guys at Classic FM wanting to be an upbeat CHR jog. Don't contact this podcast over here that's about politics and say that you do lifestyle. We've consolidated the industry to a point now where we build brands around things, super serve something.
A big thank you to Nick Pitts for being my guest. There'll be more Meet the Fellows podcasts in the next few weeks. Tomorrow is our AGM, where we officially change from the Radio Academy to the Audio Academy. And watch out for another exciting announcement too. Check out our new look website at radioacademy.org. Our first Audio Academy Foot in the Door event is on the 12th of March in Colchester at the University of Essex. Foot in the Door is an amazing opportunity for people at entry and early career level in audio. It's a way to build skills, to have open access to experts in audio, and take part in training workshops and a speed networking session. You can book now at radioacademy.org/events. Foot in the Door, University of Essex. Don't forget to like and subscribe to the podcast. And if you fancy leaving us a quick review, that would be amazing. Thank you. Next week, our podcast comes from Glasgow, where we're running a workshop and talking to students at the university. On the podcast, we'll hear from a panel of experts in audio hosted by BBC Radio Scotland presenter Lynn Hogan. I'll see you next week.